We're back with the show that you love called Freeze All Motor Functions, a Westworld podcast for newcomers and veterans alike that doesn't sound like anything to me.
Doesn't sound like anything to me either.
Really?
Really.
Oh, I thought it was just me this whole time.
Nope.
I'm Jared Borislow. This is Ross Bolin.
Hello. Welcome, sir.
We're in our new office. We're no longer in Micah's house or another guy named Brad's house. We have our office back.
It's brand new home of Grand X Media. We're in it. We're in the podcast studio, which is still under construction.
There's a
if
large,
the sound quality's not as good today as usual, we're working on it. We're getting there. Just bear with us and enjoy another fantastic episode of Freeze All Motor Functions.
Yeah, we haven't got the soundproofing up yet. There's currently a rug rolled up. There could be a dead body in that rug, for all we know.
It'd be a very skinny corpse.
Yeah, that makes more sense, because skinny people are easier to kill.
I don't know if that's necessarily true.
You never snapped a skinny person like a twig over your knee?
You seen my knees?
The skinny person would snap your knees in half. Ross has very skinny legs.
I do.
Nice long legs.
Very sexy, smooth, long legs. I have.
Well, guys, we're coming to you live from Austin, Texas, again, to talk about episode 8 of Westworld called Trace Decay.
Trace Decay.
It's a great episode.
Trace Decay.
Do you think it's a great episode, too?
Trace Decay.
You're just going to keep saying that. I want to start the show off, like we always do, by doing the most important thing that we do on this show. Thank you, the listener, for listening. I know that as a listener, you're really only obligated to do one thing, and that's listen. But we appreciate that you do that for us. You know, your support has been great. We love interacting with you when you tweeted us and you follow us on social media. And we love putting words in your ears on a weekly basis.
If you would do us the pleasure of telling your friends and family members who watch Westworld about the podcast, we would very much appreciate that. That would go a long way to helping us maintain employment.
And also, people who don't watch Westworld, make them.
Yeah, they need to get in on season one before season two starts next month. Time is running out.
Lucky for them, we have a backlog of episodes they can listen to after they watch their episodes.
We are less than a month away from the launch, the premiere of Westworld season two. Think about that for a second.
This is our first podcast inside the month. That's wild.
Yeah,
challenge your friend or roommate to hand-to-hand combat if they don't subscribe to us, too, on Grand X Labs, the experimental podcast feed, Grand X Media.
Yeah, you can do that if you want, sure.
I want to announce, before we get into this, that
this is a big announcement. This is big.
We have a new friend of the show.
You going to tell him who it is, or are you just going to sit there like a fucking idiot?
I wanted you to have like some sort of response, but like build me, gas me up.
Nope.
Okay, well, it's Jeffrey Wright, a.k.a. Bernard.
How cool is that?
So intern Serena, who does our awesome Photoshop, so you can see on Twitter, at Freeze All Motor, and Instagram, at Freeze All Motor Functions, made a Spider-Man meme with Bernard's face. And Jeffrey Wright took it, and he retweeted it on Twitter, and posted it on his Instagram page, linking, or, you know, not linking, I guess, but tagging our podcast. It made me feel very nice inside.
If, like, Jeffrey Wright essentially is in the studio with us right now, that's basically true, because he did that. And also, Elsie, the actress who plays Elsie, gave us more love.
Yeah, she did. She just keeps hanging out. They're both friends of the show. Yeah, Jeffrey Wright, he was going to come actually into the podcast studio, but he couldn't find the door. He's still outside looking for the door. Didn't look like anything to him.
Because it didn't look like anything to him. Yeah, if we don't get Jeffrey Wright or what's the name of the actress? Shannon Woodward on the show, we are failures.
I mean,
FYI.
They've been posting our property.
I'm aware of that. I'm just saying the next step is to work them into the show. We got to get them in here.
I mean, like, is there a way we can maybe do like a cease and desist unless you come on the podcast, you know?
I don't know. We'll have to talk to our lawyers.
Do you have a lawyer?
I've got a whole team of lawyers.
Oh, what do you use those for usually?
They have to enforce that listeners of my other show, the Ross Bolin Podcast, rate and review my show. If they don't, then we take them to court.
That's how it works. You just put that in there. You just put that plug in there.
You asked, okay. So I answered.
Well, everybody really has been tuning in this week because it is going to be the premiere of the first and maybe best ever possible segment on Freeze All Motor Functions.
Yeah. No, it's called Blazing Saddles. We explained it last week and maybe the week before that, too. Mm-hmm. I watched the episode this week quite stoned.
Yes.
I watched Trace Decay under the influence of marijuana, and I made some notes. So it's not going to be so much a segment as it is, as we go through the episode and we talk about it, I'm going to say, here's one of the Blazing Saddles notes I made, and I have a separate document with my high thoughts.
It's a top secret document. It's actually password protected.
It is, and so those you got that to look forward to throughout the entire show today. I there's not a lot of wisdom in these notes, but they're interesting. I'll just leave it at that.
If you're new to the show, this is your first episode. Maybe you came in because you saw that we were going to have a high guy giving his thoughts on Westworld.
I hope not. That would be weird if that was like your main motivation for coming in the middle of the season.
I think that some people have that kind of motivation, though.
Fair enough.
But yeah, what we do, we go through the episode, spoiler free. So if this is your first watch through, we only will reference things that have happened up to the episode we're on. So episode 1 through 8. That's what we'll be talking about. No 9, no 10.
No, exactly. Correct. Thank you.
And another thing we got going on here, before we get into the recap.
Of what, our hotline?
8, it's the cold line.
I'm sorry, the cold line.
We got some cold line calls. If you want to get on our cold line, 888-6-FREEZE. It's time to freeze. Am I getting better?
That was a little better.
Okay, thank you.
Then the last time.
It's time to freeze.
Yeah, let's play these calls, fam.
Here's the first of the calls.
All right, yo, it's Cassie from St. Louis. Here's the thing, dude, Ross. People know what the word coding means when referring to someone dying in a hospital bed. People know. So stop acting like it's this new-ass thing. People know. If you work in the medical field or you've ever watched a hospital show, people know what coding is. And also, yes, Third Eye Blind mentioned it in one of their songs. Also, when Elsie's like going on leave, they mentioned in a previous episode, because you know how their park is somewhere super freaking far away, like underwater on the moon or some shit, but so that's why they live there, is because it's far away or remote, and so they go home for periods of time, and they mentioned something about that earlier in an earlier episode. So maybe people think that it's just her turn to like go home and live her regular life. That's what I gotta say. All right, see ya later. Wow, yeah.
That's a great way to end the call. Look, I know. All right, and I'm aware. I was wrong. People know. It's just me who didn't know. My mom texted me. My mother, Mrs. Boland, texted me. And she said pretty much the same thing. She was like, people know what coding is. And I was like, maybe I'm the only fool who didn't know.
Yeah.
So my bad, I'm sorry.
No, you were totally wrong and I was right. Can you say that? Can I get that in recording?
No.
Okay, next call.
Hey, Jared. Quick question. Did you major in Spanish? Just wanted to know. But I've got 2 points I want to point out. 2 reasons why I am convinced that Charlotte, the head of the board, is a host. Reason one, when she opens the door to Teresa for their high-level meeting right after she's boned Hector, she's completely naked. And if you remember earlier on, Ford talking about how the hosts don't feel shame, don't feel any sort of weirdness about being naked. And there's a big speech about that. So that's reason one. The second reason was when Ford says this requires a blood sacrifice, he essentially quotes exactly what Charlotte says to Teresa. So it's very likely that Ford told Charlotte to say that line to Teresa and then therefore killed her. So those are my 2 main reasons why, but also would love to know what language you majored in, Jared, and if there's any ammonium water that we can spray on you. Thanks. Great. Love the podcast. Thanks, guys.
That's a good question. So I actually majored in Spanish.
All right. The thing is, though, she robes up immediately afterwards. So she is... Like, answering the door naked was just a power move.
It was.
Then she puts the robe on. But I will acknowledge this. At this point, there's no reason that we shouldn't doubt every single character on the show because we've just seen that Bernard is a host, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing to stop Ford from taking out a member of the board and creating a host to replace them. There's nothing to keep him from doing that. So, yeah, it's a possibility. I don't think Charlotte is a host, personally. I don't think so. But I totally get that train of thought, yeah.
You ruined his first point. I'm going to ruin his second point. I believe that Ford was listening in on their conversation via Hector, who was sitting in the bed.
There you go. Perfect explanation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But getting back to the reason you called, I majored in Spanish.
Again, 888-6-FREEZE is the hotline number. You can call it, and we will ruin everything you say.
Everything. Next call.
Hey, Ross. Hey, J-Bone. So, some people were wondering, why was there no clear explanation or concrete reason for Maeve wanting to leave Westworld? And, you know, there's all the obvious reasons, like she's trapped in that eternal hell of Ford's games. But I think the real reason is pretty obvious. She actually just wants to escape because in Westworld, there's no bone zone. Hit that motherfucking chime, Micah. As fun as it is listening to the Lord of the Bone Zone troll Ross for 2 straight hours, it'd be even better with that skeleton chime. Bring back the bone zone.
Wow, another person wants the bone zone on Freeza Moto Functions. Ross, give me that thought of yours.
I've made my stance on this very clear. You can have the bone zone, but then you can't have me.
You're making me choose between my two loves?
You're going to pick between me and the bone zone on Freeze All Motor Functions. That's all I have to say, Jared. We've talked about this many, many times off air. All right? Quit calling in suggesting we do the bone zone.
For those unaware, the bone zone was a segment I used to do on a Backdoor Cover, which is our sports podcast here from Grand X Media. And it was the most popular segment in the history of any Grand X podcast ever.
You're close there. It's the most polarizing segment. It's same. It starts with a P, just like popular, but polarizing is the word you're looking for.
Well, it's the same thing. If actually, it's better to be polarizing because that means you have both good and bad. Popular could just mean good. So,
I do have to agree with that.
So it was the most polarizing segment, and a lot of people wanted it on here, and you might get it. But if so, we'll have to say goodbye to Ross, and we'll figure out one day.
Maybe you just make a host version of me and plug him in here.
I'm going to plug the host version of you? It's gross.
Plug him into the show.
Oh, I thought you meant, I thought you meant.
You know you didn't. I know you didn't.
That's what I thought. Anyways.
More of these calls or what?
That's it. That's it for this week.
Great. We ended on the one that suggested the bone zone. That's great.
You know what? We'll play one more then. Fine. We're just going to, we'll do it live. Here we go.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, this is Eric. I'm in New Jersey. Actually, I haven't seen Elsie lately, but I'll keep an eye out. Bye.
Thanks, Eric. Eric from New Jersey will be keeping an eye out for Elsie, just like all of us.
Is Eric on sedatives?
I don't know what. Eric, call in to 888-6-FREEZE to tell us what you were on.
Eric, you've got a dart in your neck, man. You're crazy. I love you, but you're crazy.
Dude, I mean, we want somebody like Eric to be on the lookout for Elsie. I'm sure he's got eyes in the back of his head.
Well, we see her in this episode. You know, thankfully, Eric doesn't need to keep a lookout anymore.
Well, we didn't see enough to give us any sort of clarification. But, you know, we'll get into that.
Speaking of this episode, let's do it.
It's time to do the episode. Episode 8. Say it, Ross.
Trace Decay.
SimplyPsychology.org. Says, trace decay theory states that forgetting occurs as a result of the automatic decay or fading of the memory trace. Trace decay theory focuses on time and the limited duration of short-term memory. This theory suggests short-term memory can only hold information for between 15 and 30 seconds unless it is rehearsed. After this time, the information / trace decays and fades away. As it relates to this episode, I think that we see a lot of memory-related scenes in this episode. This whole entire episode is really about memory. You have people who are being forced to forget memories with Bernard and Teresa. You have Maeve and Dolores both losing sight of reality because of memories. So to me, Trace Decay, the title, highlights the difference between humans and hosts. Because humans, their memory trace can fade. But hosts remember everything in perfect detail. But the irony is that the humans who have the memory, who are memory imperfect, are making the memory perfect hosts get down to their level like assholes.
Irony.
What are your thoughts on that?
That is very high level, intelligent analysis.
I wish I had asked you to Blazing Saddles that, but alas, I did not.
The thing is, I have Blazing Saddles notes that relate to a lot of what you just said, but a lot of what you just said is going to come up again as we go through the episode. Oh, so yeah. I'm withholding Blazing Saddles notes as of now.
You're a great host. We start off the episode. Bring yourself back online, Bernard.
Okay, so this brings up my first Blazing Saddles note. I wrote, so when Ford says, bring yourself back online, Bernard, I was like, whoa. That's the note. That's all it says.
Okay, so
that blew my mind. I will say this, it felt like they like oversold it a little. Like it was almost like a little cheesy how long the pause before Bernard was.
Yeah.
But all in all, yeah, we've never seen an episode start that way.
Micah, what I'm going to need you to do after this is I'm going to say, booty had me like, and then you're going to cut Ross saying, like, whoa, and then you're going to put it in right where I just said that.
Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, this line, you know, bring yourself back online, Bernard, being said by Ford, very much meant to juxtapose Bernard, who started a lot of episodes by saying, bring yourself back online, Dolores.
Yes, or just bring yourself back online.
Yeah. So I love how they did this to just signify Bernard's newfound status as a host, but also inform the viewer that the questions you have from last episode, we're starting off right now with that.
Yes.
They're not going to bury the lead and make you sit through like a boring-ass William and Dolores scene.
No, I really like the way this one started out. It got right into the thick of it, just like you said.
The first, yeah, like 10 minutes of this episode were unbelievable. It was just with the narration and the way they tie the two scenes together with Maeve and Ford. We'll get into that, though.
We're getting into it now. This is what we're doing.
So Bernard comes back online, and we see him go through pretty much every single emotion that there is besides happiness as he realizes he murdered Teresa. He's going through the second worst thing to ever happen to him, pretty much, besides the loss of his son. He's sobbing uncontrollably. And then Ford says, this guilt you feel, the anger, the horror, the pain, it's remarkable, a thing of beauty.
Yeah, it's, I mean, obviously that's, Ford is so cold, you know, it's weird because he obviously has some level of, you know, joy in these creations of his and their freedom and their ability to think and their consciousness or whatever you want to call it. Obviously he doesn't believe in consciousness, he thinks we're all...
Yeah.
He explains that later, but it's so hard to put your finger on what exactly this type of response means about, what does that say about Ford? Because this is his creation that's going through something horrific. He's very upset, and Ford's response is like reveling in the beauty of it all.
Yeah, to me, this completely tied up the entire thing with Ford being a massive, blunt asshole to Bernard all the time. Like, oh, how about your dead son?
Right.
Like, this was finally like, oh, he was doing that every time because he knew he was a fucking host. And, you know, he would actually feel this pain. But for some reason to Ford, that pain, because he made it, isn't real.
Right. And it's almost like a test to make sure that it still works.
Yeah.
That he still feels pain.
That's the craziest thing because... As we talk about later, Ford thinks that consciousness isn't real and that, you know, there's nothing separating us. That robots, hosts, are not missing out on anything by not being human.
Yeah, his explanation for it is very poignant, and it's...
Hell yeah.
I mean, we'll get to it later. I thought that was the best part of the entire episode, him explaining his theories on... His thoughts on consciousness was fantastic.
It was... So confusing that I'm excited to talk about with you because yeah. I don't even know if I get it. Bernard says, I'm a killer. My God, my God. Ford says, God has nothing to do with it. You killed her because I told you to. And you should be proud of these emotions you're feeling. And Bernard's like, what? And he says, proud? Ford says, yeah. After all, you yourself were the author of so many of them. We learn that Ford created Bernard to assist him in creating the emotions between love and hate. Because the human engineers, he says, were not up to the task.
Yeah, this whole situation here got Blazing Saddles going again, because it was like the thought of a host, Bernard, doing coding to create other hosts just made my brain hurt. Like, that, the complexity of this show never fails to amaze me, episode by episode.
If your brain hurt, it's a good thing that you were getting medicated while watching the show.
I was. But I think that's why my brain hurt. I couldn't wrap my head around that concept. It's just crazy. I mean, so he's had this guy.
Did you pull a Maeve and just freeze?
I had a lot of Maeve tweak outs during my watching of this episode, for sure. I didn't freeze at any point, I don't think. I guess it's possible. I wouldn't know. They probably just wipe my memory. But the, if you think back to everything we've seen, we're 8 episodes in, 6 of which we had no idea that Bernard was a host. Mm-hmm. If you think back to all the scenes with Bernard now that you know he's a host, so many of them make so much more sense. And it's so crazy to think of the fact that Ford had access to all of the information Bernard was consuming,
yeah,
from other people, from things he was doing. It's like he had a little, you know, crony out there doing his bidding, basically, at all times.
He was completely involved in, you know, everything that Elsie was telling Bernard Ford knew about. So, like, think about how much secret stuff that Elsie was trying to keep from Ford that was just going straight to him.
Yeah, the only thing I have other than that is it made me wonder, like, has the board at no point been worried about a situation like this? Because clearly this should have been, if I'm on the board of Delos or whatever it's called, and we're having issues with this guy, Ford, one of the concerns for me is going to be, well, this dude could, like, create a host and have it doing his bidding. You know what I mean? Like, you would think of that as a possible issue. And it is, obviously, now. So I just wonder if they've ever considered that.
And, see, that was interesting to me, because Ford says to Bernard, he says, they wanted to come in here and destroy all this, destroy you. Do we think that they would have found out Bernard was a host?
I don't know. Somehow? That's a good question. I don't think so. But, I mean, theoretically, though, the idea is they did want to destroy him, would have wanted to, you know?
I mean, they already did. They fired his ass, but...
Not anymore.
So Bernard says, I don't understand. I cared for Teresa, loved her. Why did you make me kill her? And then Ford says, a quote from Frankenstein, one man's life or death were but a small price to pay for the acquirement of the knowledge which I sought, for the dominion I should acquire. Essentially saying she had to go so he could continue on his path, because Teresa and the board would have destroyed everything he'd created, including Bernard. Like I said, this is a quote from Frankenstein. The show's writers, again, I've always done this. They cut the quote short, and the conspiracy theory part of my brain tells me there's meaning in what they leave off whenever they do this.
Right.
Ford left off, so after it goes, for the dominion I should acquire and transmit over the elemental foes of our race. Ford says our race. Is Ford a host? Roscoe.
But he didn't say this, I thought.
He didn't say this, but, you know.
So Ford doesn't say our race.
He doesn't say our race, but he says a quote
that would have ended in our race.
Yes.
Is he a host to? No. It's an interesting thought. But I will say this about Ford and his incessant quoting, or his using Shakespeare, using Mary Ashley or whatever the hell the name is.
Mary Shelley.
Mary Shelley.
You were thinking Mary-Kate and Ashley.
Ashley Stubbs. Mary-Kate and Ashley. What was I talking about?
Are you Blazing Saddles right now?
No, but what was I talking about?
You were talking about...
Oh, it's annoying when people do this to seem smart or to show you how smart they are by quoting something from literature or from history or whatever and not giving you the attribution, just using it as their own, which is what Ford does constantly. He, on occasion, will say, like, that something is Shakespeare or whatever, but mostly, and like in this case, he doesn't acknowledge Mary Shelley. He just uses one of her lines.
The idea that saying something that a smart person said at some point makes you smart is bizarre.
That's not how it works. And just because you're smart enough to remember or memorize something is not impressive. If you're one of the people who does this, who spits out quotes like this, go fuck yourself. Stop it. I also have a terrible memory, so I can't do things like this. And that's part of the reason for my stance. I'll be totally transparent here.
No, that's impressive that you say that you have a bad memory, because I feel like you're very good at quoting movies.
Maybe that's the problem, is that my brain is filled entirely with movie and TV show quotes and information, so I don't have anything room left for, like, actually important things, and as a result, can't remember anything except TV shows and movies.
I have a huge problem. I am the worst movie or TV quoter of all time. Literally, the only quote I could tell you right now from a TV show is Freeze All Motor Functions, because it's the name of this podcast that we have.
That's truly sad.
Yeah. What was it? It doesn't look like anything
to them.
Tim. Oh.
To Tim.
Tim. Who's Tim?
Tim.
It's Tim, though, right?
Timmy Crockett. He's Ford's assistant.
Oh, yeah. He's the guy with the fucks the hosts.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's him and Duncan.
Dustin.
Him and Dustin. Okay, so Ford goes on to say that Bernard and he have a new story to tell, and Bernard lashes out before Ford freezes his motor
functions.
I mean,
he's about to, like, kill him here.
Yeah, he's getting pissed. He throws a chair like it's WWE SmackDown.
He's about to kill Ford if he doesn't get froze up.
His motor functions are frozen, and Ford says Bernard is following in Arnold's footsteps as people who have threatened him, but he says Arnold couldn't stop him either.
Yeah, what's the deal here? This is all very confusing. Did it makes me okay? So what we've been told is that Arnold committed suicide.
Yeah, in the park.
In the park. We don't have any other information other than that, correct?
Yeah.
So this obviously brings that into question, and makes you think, well, maybe Ford set up. Maybe Ford killed Arnold, whether directly or indirectly.
Yeah, I actually have some parallels here with that between the Man in Black. How did he kill his wife directly, indirectly? We find remember later in the episode.
Yeah, it seemed like indirectly though.
It does seem indirectly,
like,
but
she really committed suicide.
We don't know. That's the same thing with this.
But that's just what he tells us.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So all we can do is go off the words of these people. So
and that being said,
we have no idea.
Yeah, that's another example. There's so many. I'll talk about this as we go through the amount of things, the parity between storylines they create in this episode. We see, you know, like I said, Dolores and Maeve both, you know, talking about how memories are clouding their ability to know if they're in reality or the past. Those both happen. You have Dolores, you know, saying, I've been here before. And there's so many, and I don't know. There's just this episode, and I think going back to the whole Trace Decay theme, has so many instances of the different storylines that we go through in this show having very, very similar happenings.
Okay.
But yeah, I'll talk more about that. It'll be way easier to understand when I actually get to it rather than when I try to talk about it just completely abstractly.
Way too early, yeah.
Yeah, that was my fault.
It's okay. It happens to the best of us and the worst of us, like you.
Ford then ties us all together by bringing the beauty of the emotions that he created back up and saying what's even more sublime about the emotions is the ability to turn them off. And then he just calms Bernard down right away.
Without speaking with his mind control or whatever. We're still not completely sure all of the ways Ford can control the hosts he has created. Because we know he's got some kind of hand motion thing going. He's done some of that before. We know he can do the tablet, obviously. Anybody can, or anybody who knows how to use it. But there have been scenes where it appears he controls hosts, freezes them, gets them to do things or whatever without even speaking or moving. So I don't know.
Yeah, some sort of brain control thing. Maybe he's got a tablet in his head.
He's got a chip.
He's got a chip on his shoulder. That much we know. So Ford lays out his plan. He says that he will make Bernard forget about what he's done and forget that him and Teresa were lovers if he completely covers their tracks regarding Teresa's murder.
Right. Ford's just kind of a weird sale to Bernard, but whatever.
Yeah, I can't really imagine that working in a lot of other circumstances.
No, that wouldn't work in real with two humans.
Hey, Ross, if you I know you just stole those Mike and Ikes from the gas station for me, but if you go and kill the gas station owner, I'll whack you over the head with a baseball bat and you forget you ever did it.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Okay, well, I tried. Ford then speaks over shots of Bernard covering his tracks, and at the end says that after he's done with Bernard, Bernard will be, and then it cuts to Maeve and says, at peace.
At peace.
So they really meld these two scenes together. And I thought that was interesting because Maeve's peace is the complete opposite of Bernard's. Maeve wants to know everything she's ever done, whereas Bernard wants to forget the bad thing he's done.
Well, that's the thing that this was confusing to me because I don't know that Bernard does want to forget. And we get a little more of this soon, but he doesn't really respond to Ford's offer, right? He just does it.
Yeah.
So are we to believe that he agreed to this or that Ford made him do the things anyway? Because it's
That's a good point.
It's interesting that later on when he has some, Ford lies to him and he recalls something that wipes out, that proves Ford is lying.
Yeah.
And it just makes me think, I don't know. I'm saying I'm not on board with him wanting to forget.
Oh, I totally get that. I agree with you. Maybe he didn't want to forget.
We don't know yet. I just don't think we know at the moment.
So I guess maybe their pieces are the same. They're both at peace, you know, not forgetting.
Perhaps.
We cut to Maeve at the Mariposa. House of the Rising Sun plays on the player piano, which sounds cool.
Yes, it does.
And then there's a new Clementine.
I hate that they labeled her new Clementine. That's what we do. That's our job. That's what it says like in the closed captions when you watch the show.
Her name is
new,
Clementine.
Yeah. It really pissed me off. Cut the check.
We also see that Maeve is not having any of this new Clementine business. She does not like new Clementine.
I think she's just pissed off that there is a new Clementine at all, because she obviously remembers old Clementine and is upset by the whole situation,
And I love in this scene how House of the Rising Sun just matches up perfectly with the drama of it, and reaches the crescendo at the peak of Maeve's anger, and then just completely stops once Maeve settles into that flashback of her and her daughter.
Yeah. Which, what spurred that? Is it just kind of random, or?
To me, that one seemed random. Usually there's something that causes it,
but this one, it seems like she's having an easier time getting into memories now, getting into flashbacks.
So she has this memory of being with her daughter, which prompts her to presumably kill herself somehow to return to Felix and Sylvester and ask them what the fuck is up.
Right.
She now does not know which is real, the memories she's experiencing or her actual present-day life, which is next level fucked upness for these hosts. First we had flashbacks, then we had the incorporation of memories into the present day, and now there's just a complete distortion of reality.
Yeah, this is the bizarre thing. I mean, this was a Blazing Saddles moment for me too. I said, imagine if humans remembered things like the hosts do in Westworld, like if recalling a memory was exactly like reliving the event entirely. Damn, that shit would be wild. The definition of time and space would change entirely. I don't remember anything from before, like when I was 10 years old. Like nothing. That's what I wrote. So here's the concept of that when a host like Maeve has a memory or accesses a memory, that it is like actually reliving it would mess you up so badly. I mean, so because you could just constantly sit there going back and forth between memories and present, and it would just like... So what if she was to access a memory and then just live out that memory from then until present?
That's
you know
wild.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and she would just be sitting... It's just... There's too much. It's too much.
That's totally wild. It's all... I came in... So they're thinking... They can remember memories so vividly that it's literally like they're there.
Like it's happening.
Like, if we're thinking about a memory, and I close my eyes, I just see black, and like, you can kind of... Your brain can put images in your head.
Right.
But you can't live out specific vivid things where you can... She says she feels her daughter's hair.
Right. Stuff like that. Like, well, it also explains a lot of what's been going on with Dolores, because she has had this experience many, many, many times, and it's what makes it so confusing for her.
Yeah.
So this particular explanation really helped me understand why the hosts are so confused, why it's all so crazy.
Yeah, if humans could just completely relive memories like that, I would be so pissed, because then I'd have to remember every single cringeworthy thing I did between the ages of 9 and 18, which I've heavily, heavily repressed.
Suppressed.
I wrote suppressed, but it's actually repressed.
I thought it was suppressed. Like, you suppress a memory.
I thought you repressed a memory. Oh, great. Now we have repress gate.
I thought
good going.
I thought you repress a collared shirt on an ironing board. I don't even know. I don't know what we're talking about anymore.
I think I'm right, if that's all you need to know. Maeve asks if the little girl is real and still in the park, and Felix is like, oh, I can check. But then Maeve's like, wait, I actually don't give a fuck, because all these relationships that I have in my head are just things that were designed by you to keep me here, and I'm trying to get the fuck out.
Yeah, you're right about repression.
Thank you.
Hold on, though. Hold on, Jared.
Oh, no.
I think there are suppressed memories, too.
How about compressed memories?
Oh, man, this is too much. Anyway, continue. I'm sorry.
Maeve says that, like I said, all these relationships were just designed to keep her there, and she's trying to get out, And this is a crazy concept, that the only thing keeping us from discovering our true selves is the idea that there are people who we care about who are stopping us from these journeys of self-discovery. That sounds like something you would have written down, but it's something I wrote down.
That is, yes, fair. And I don't think I could have gotten that far with the state I was in, but I don't necessarily agree with her assessment that all their relationships were created just to keep them there. The relationships were created for the sake of storyline so that the guests can enjoy themselves.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. I think that...
I know from her point of view, it's different.
Exactly.
But from mine, when I was listening to her say that, I was like, well, no, not really. I mean, this is for our entertainment.
But it's definitely a side effect, is that, let's say she goes to Clementine and says, hey, like, this is all fake. You know, Clementine wouldn't be able to... She would just think she was crazy.
Right.
So I think that's what she's getting at, is like the idea that we are too scared to find out maybe what we really could be because we don't want to be, you know, society holds us back, which makes me wonder, is the loner lifestyle the correct lifestyle if you want to achieve the ultimate destiny of self-enlightenment, Roscoe?
I don't think so, just because how do you achieve any type of different thinking or learn anything or have, you know, significant experiences if you're solo?
Wikipedia.
That's not solo. That's you interacting with people on the internet. Somebody wrote that Wikipedia.
No, dude. No. Wikipedia has always been there. Wikipedia is like Rosetta Stone. They just put it on the internet.
Okay. But no, I don't think so. Loner lifestyle is not the way to go, people.
Okay, Ross. Ross, that's Ross bragging that he's married.
I don't think it was, but regardless...
Felix says Maeve knows nothing about the world outside and questions how she'd ever survive out there, but Maeve responds that the knowledge she isn't living a lie would be enough for her. So she seems pretty set on trying to get out of Westworld.
So she's so upset by the by the fact that she's a robot living on a loop doing what other humans tell her to do and program her to do and say, that she doesn't care if she would die, she just wants to get out and have freedom.
Sounds a lot like the Man in Black, too.
Like the reverse, right? And then what's weird is, like, here's what's confusing to me. And I couldn't even correctly put this into words in the Blazing Saddles segment.
Just read what you have.
No, it's not even on there. I literally couldn't even think of a way to type it. So if she was to break out and get into the real world, would she be living some more true version of her life? Because wouldn't she still only be able to access and say things that have been programmed into her?
I think at this point, she's unlocked complete improv.
Okay, so now she can do and say whatever she wants based on...
Because there's no way she's programmed to tell hosts to kill each other and stuff, you know?
It's just so different because, like, right now, I mean, I can literally do whatever I want. Like, I could get up and kick you in the head. I could take my dick out and swing it around. I'm a human being with free will to do whatever the hell I want. Literally anything. She doesn't have that.
Okay, but what she has programmed into her, she has free will programmed into her. Just like you do, too. There's nothing that gives you more free will than a robot who has free will programmed into it. You're just a fleshy being, a hot fleshy being with nice long legs that was given the idea of free will, and you act on it, which she's capable of doing with her 20 bull cap perception and her newfound improv skills.
Yeah, and with what Ford says later, I mean, we're just robots. That's what it is, right?
Yeah, there's nothing separating us from robots, and anything that does separate us, they're not missing out on much.
Damn it. Okay.
What if Micah's a robot? Producer Micah.
I don't know.
Nah, he farts way too much to be a robot. Could just be some sort of
carbon
monoxide.
Maybe that's the way robots get rid of some type of excess gas.
Huh. We'll never know.
That's why we do it.
Speaking of things that happen inside robots, we learned that all of the hosts have an explosive charge in Vertebra C6 that would just explode if they try to escape.
Finally, someone mentions some kind of failsafe that keeps these people in the park or these robots, whatever. It doesn't matter. Yeah, this is good. Thankfully, someone was smart enough to actually do something to make sure that nothing horrible like a robot escaping and wreaking havoc on the world could actually happen.
But I love that it's so over the top. What if there's a human next to the robot? The robot just kills everybody around
Here's an idea. How about just a kill switch instead of an explosive charge? You know what I mean? Yeah, it's a great point. What if the robot is carrying a human out with it?
Yeah.
But regardless, at least there's something. Now, that being said, why the hell did they tell her this?
I think she found it out when she was researching the hosts because, you know, she was, like, looking into her own mind and stuff.
Oh, yeah, okay. And she finds out it's on the C6 vertebrae and... Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Fucking Maeve. She's a troublemaker.
The explosive charge thing was bizarre to me. Like... You'll explode. It'd be like that. It'll be like the scene from opening scene of Jackass.
Here's the only thing I can think though is that it's for the protection of the information that is within the hosts. They don't want a host getting out, powering down, and then getting grabbed by someone else. They want it to be completely void of value, so it explodes.
Then they should have put some huge super magnets on the front door, so they just defragment the second that they walk through.
I'm with you. There's a lot of better options than the explosive charge on the C6 vertebrae, but that sounds really tight, and I'm sure that whoever came up with the idea was like, fuck it, this isn't the best idea, but it's tight.
I would love to see a C6 vertebra explode. Also, I will say right now, they completely missed out on the opportunity to put it on the C4 vertebra if it's an explosive device. Think about it.
Yeah, that would have been even more clever and cool. What an idiot, whoever's idea this was, Ford, probably.
Moron. So we also see that because of this explosive charge, Maeve wants a full rebuild to remove it from her body.
So a full rebuild would entail a brand new robot structure that has Maeve's skin put over it and Maeve memory brain pumped into it or whatever? Is that what that means?
I have absolutely no idea.
Cool. I think that's what it means, but that seems like so outrageous to me. That'd be another advantage to being a robot. Like, you know, I'm 30, I'm getting a little older, things don't work as well as they used to. What if I wanted to get a full rebuild? I can't because I'm a human being. I'm limited. And then I'm stuck with this fucking body for the rest of my life.
Well, you can go to Westlake Dermatology and get a facelift and like a boob job.
Not the same thing. It's just not the same. I want a brand new me. You know what I mean? With no rust on the hinges, no damage, no... And I can't get that.
I want a brand new you also so that I could have a version of you that lets me do the bone zone. Just the robo
zone.
That's
what you would include in my rebuild.
Yeah. Okay. It's like, hey, this guy actually fucking loves... The bone zone.
Listen, we're going to rebuild Bolin, but we're going to make him love the bone zone this time. That's the change.
So we also see that Maeve plans on recruiting host allies somehow via the tablet. And she says, time to write my own fucking story.
Yeah, she's getting pretty aggressive. She's going to build an army. She's nutsy.
Yeah, when she said this, the contrast between this and the preceding scene with Ford and Bernard becomes really apparent. The opening scene is about humans having complete control over hosts, even having the power to make them do things that they'd never wish to do. And this scene is about a host controlling the hosts and also controlling herself. To me, it seems like an army of hosts killing the humans who thought they controlled them is the ultimate contrapasso.
And really what it all comes down to is, what is life? Jared, answer that.
Life? Isn't that a cereal?
Yes, that is correct. Moving on. It's also a board game, I believe.
The game of life, which is what we're all playing.
It is.
Yeah. Cut to William and Dolores in the park. Dolores feels like where they are is somewhere they've been before, and she says home.
Yeah, she's starting to crack. Like, scene by scene in this episode, she's fucking losing it.
It's weird because she talks so much about leaving home and, like, going to new places, but she seems really excited about this home. So, like, what the hell is she talking
why
about?
Why is this home to her, though? This thing, this area they find?
We find out later.
Cool.
If you were wondering.
Cool. Well, I guess we'll talk about it then.
Dolores just starts walking away from William, just by herself, doesn't even care that he's not following, and stumbles upon the aftermath of a Ghost Nation ambush on the Confederados. And we find out from an injured Confederado that they got word from Pariah to kill El Lazo and the man and woman with him because of this new recruit who's with the Confederados. And William immediately is like, oh, fuck, it's Logan.
I mean, before he said it even, I was like, oh, yeah, this is tight. This is going to be Logan. And that's hilarious. Logan was like, well, screw it. I'm just going to join the Confederados. Yeah. And now he's part of their crew.
Which makes me wonder, how hard do you think? Do you think Logan, it took like an extra level of cunning for him to flip that? Or could he just be like, hey, let me be in your gang. And as a guest, they just let him in.
Well, I think once they beat his ass, it's just like, you know, blood in, blood out.
It was an initiation ritual?
Yeah.
That's why he was smiling. He was like, yeah, I'm finally a Confederado.
Kick my ass. I love it.
Dolores goes to fetch some water for this injured Confederado, which is weird. William is really against like helping this guy out, which is completely against you know, everything William was when he came into the park.
Yeah, he's taking little steps, because this one he's like, well, this dude was sent to kill us. But it's like, well, William, again, you don't seem to be clear on this. He's not real. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. He's judging this guy as if he's made some moral conscious decision to come murder him and Dolores. He's part of a narrative. He's a robot, mm-hmm. dude.
And
what the hell is the robot going to do with water?
I mean, they need it. You know, their bodies are like ours.
Are they? I don't know. I'm just saying.
I actually don't drink water anymore. I only drink LaCroix.
That's probably not good for you. You should talk to a doctor about that.
I'll talk to somebody about it. It's the great people at LaCroix. They don't sponsor us, but I would like them to.
I'm going to be real with you. I'm not a LaCroix guy. I don't give a shit if they sponsor us. So that probably just canceled out any goodwill you bought with them, and we can move on.
Okay. Well, noted. I want to ruin the next thing you love, too.
Good luck.
So the water, when Dolores is getting it, she starts wigging out a lot. It looks like she wasn't lying about having been there before, because she sees herself lying face down in the water, presumably having drowned.
I love that you put presumably dead. No, dude, she's dead.
And not, maybe
not
she was
presumably drowned. It means, and this is what I took it as anyway, and you did make the note that she's wearing the exact same outfit,
mm-hmm.
but when she sees these flashbacks like that one in particular of her laying face down in the water, presumably dead, not drowned, it just means that at some point in her service as a host at Westworld, she ended up there, right?
Wearing the same clothes, though. We never see... This is the first time
we've
seen...
Who the hell cares what clothes she's wearing? What does that have to do with anything?
Those were wild clothes. Those were clothes that she was wearing only because she was dressed... Remember, she got those clothes on to go and do the heist in Mexico.
So does that mean maybe she's done that before?
Oh.
Or does it mean that she was projecting some kind of possible memory of her dead in the water?
Yeah. She could have been like projecting her current self onto a past memory like we've seen before, where they can incorporate... Yeah. Present and past.
And here's the answer. We don't know.
that is the answer. And I will say right now, I would not be doing my job as a host if I didn't lay forth the possibility that Dolores was not dead or drowned in the water, but she was playing crocodile with William.
It could literally be anything. Literally.
Have you ever played crocodile? It's where you kind of plank in the water with your only a few parts of your body sticking out, and then you get out of the water and go, "Rah, I'm a crocodile."
That's not a game.
It
it's
is.
Not a real game.
No, we used to play it back at the lake. It's a Florida thing. You wouldn't understand.
Oh,
and we say crocodile because you can't say alligator, because alligators actually live in Florida. It's a whole Florida thing. I won't get into it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My first thought with this, because she hears Arnold's voice, by the way. Arnold says, "Come find me."
Find me.
And we presume it's Arnold. We don't know, but that's what makes the most logical sense to us.
Find me. Come find me.
I will say that if I knew that the outfit I was currently wearing was the outfit that I died in, whether in the future, past, whatever, I'd probably take the outfit off immediately. Because then it's like, you know, then it can't come true.
Yeah, I was thinking of it a different way. Like, then you know you get to pick out the outfit you'll be found dead in, and you want to look good.
What? Why do you...
you never thought about that before? Like, you ever put on an outfit and got in the car and been like, man, I really hope I don't get smoked by an 18-wheeler, because if I get found wearing this and they have to, like, take me to the hospital and work on me in this, this isn't the way I want to look when I go out. I've had that thought so many times.
So why would you ever wear something that you wouldn't want to die in?
Now that's the way I live my life.
You should always dress to die.
That's exactly right. That's exactly how I live my life.
The next time I see you looking fly, I'm be like, damn, Ross, you're dressed to die tonight.
Yes, that's it. We need to make t-shirts that say dressed to die.
Dressed to die. So Dolores looks around, and she sees nobody where William is supposed to be, then refocuses.
And we've seen this happen before.
Yep.
Yep.
She refocuses, comes back. Now that Maeve brought up this idea of hosts not being sure whether they're in the past, present, memory, whatever... You have to wonder what we're looking at whenever these kind of flashbacks Dolores has happens, you know? Is she in the future remembering seeing the Confederado with William and herself?
We've also seen, like, on the train when she was doing speaking with Arnold or whatever she does, where William and Elazo disappeared from the background, and we hypothesized that when she communicates with whoever this is she's communicating with, everything else disappears sort of. In a symbolic way.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, this one was a little different because it's like she turns around and everything's gone, and she's even like, "Oh, what the fuck? Where'd everything go?"
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
I'll put forth
your question.
Here's the craziest thing that makes sense, but it's like insane, and I highly doubt it's real. So when Dolores is looking at the water, when she turns around and sees nobody there,
yeah,
there's a chance that that is the present, and that the whole thing with William is a memory she had in the past, and her being dead was her dying in the river right then. Like, maybe the Ghost Nation came in. That obviously didn't happen, but at that point in the episode, when you see her do that, that could have happened.
Yeah, and it just makes my head hurt again. Yep, I can't.
All this is to say that now that memory, and we don't know if anybody is in the past or present. We don't know if anybody's real or a human. There's nothing in this show that makes sense anymore.
No, reality no longer exists in this universe of Westworld. You have to question everything. We have no idea what's real, fake, dream. It's all up in the air at this point.
Have you ever questioned the nature of your reality?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, constantly.
That's a question. It was more of a...
It's a quote from the show, so I...
Because we're on the podcast for the show?
Yeah, because this is a Westworld podcast. I didn't know if you were just, you know, but whatever.
So by the time Dolores gets back, the Confederado is, he's dead.
You know why he's dead? Because water doesn't do anything.
No, if only I'd gotten here 5 seconds earlier, this water.
No, he's gonna die.
It's like when you're in Fortnite and you're in the storm and you get a Band-Aid and you Band-Aid up right before you're about to die, and then you just, even more similarly,
drink like a potion, but the potions don't do anything to you in the storm. They don't help.
That was so much better than mine.
Yeah, you really blew that. It's okay. That's why I'm here.
And you know, let's go to a break.
You want to take a break?
Let's take a break. My head hurts too much.
This break is brought to you by Kit Kat.
Break me off a piece of that Kit Kat bar. We're back, and before we get back into the show, I'm going to let you in on a little bit of information. You may know that you're currently subscribed to Grand X Labs, which is our experimental podcast feed that we are on for the next couple weeks until we spin off into our own feed, and we'll ask you to join us on over there. But for now, since you're subscribed to Grand X Labs, it means you're getting Freeze-On Motor Function sent to your phone, but you're also getting all the other awesome Grand X Labs podcasts sent to your phone. You might not have clicked on those yet because you're like, I don't know what these are. I'm only here for the Freeze-On Motor Functions. But I'm here right now to quickly tell you, you should check those out because what we got going right now is pretty hot shit. As they say, we have Supsdog, which
no
is
one says that.
Everybody says hot shit. Jesus, chick's hot as shit. That was Billy Bush,
Micah,
right?
Producer Micah makes the point that Nelly says that.
Hot shit. So Supsdog is a gym fitness podcast, but the whole point of it is pretty much it's like shit that meatheads. How would you explain it, Ross?
I wouldn't.
You wouldn't explain it. So what it is, it's a comedy, gym, and fitness podcast. I have a body that resembles a bag of milk, so I don't work out much, but I still find this podcast hilarious because it's pretty much just Dan and Jake, two good friends of mine, giving the worst advice possible, comically terrible gym advice.
That's kind of the point, and it's very funny. You're just going to have to take our word for it. Two very funny individuals doing a fitness, health, and... supplement pop podcast.
Yeah, it's like they're pretty much two guys just trying to get like a 2 months worth of gains in like a week. So check it out. You'll like it. We also have the Dadgum podcast. It's a new podcast. Just came on the feed. They only have one episode out.
It's on Grand X Labs as well?
Yeah, it's on Grand X Labs.
Oh, shit.
So you probably have it on your phone right now. You can go listen to it.
If
you're a parent or you're thinking about being a parent.
Do you have a child? Do you laugh? This is the podcast for you.
There you go. So now you actually have an idea of what is being sent to your phone on a weekly basis. Check them out. I promise you that you'll like them, and I promise you that at the very least you'll have an hour of comedy, even if you don't want to continue with it.
I won't promise that you're going to like them because I'm not involved in either. I don't feel comfortable promising, you know. But there's a chance, and if you do, that's awesome. Keep listening to them. If you don't, come back to Freeze All Motor Functions.
That too. Those are the things that are on your phone on Grand X Labs. Time for the show.
There you go. I think that was very nice of you to explain that to the people.
Yeah, now they know it's on their phone. Let's cut to Teresa's body in a morgue.
Love it. That's just where I want to be.
The A-team Ashley Stubbs found Teresa in Python Pass at the bottom of the same ravine they found the stray woodcutter in.
Which is just cruel.
Do you think that's Ford making a message that this is what happens when you betray him? Or do you think it was just an easy way for Ford to disguise Teresa's murder as an accident by pinning her with the transmitter?
I don't think that it has to be mutually exclusive. I think that it's both.
Yeah, I think so too. We find out that the autopsy suggests it was a simple slip and fall with no guest or host in the vicinity when it happened. They think Teresa's got butter feet. It's like Butterfingers, but with your feet.
Butterfeets.
Good old Butterfeet Teresa. Speaking of Butterfeet, do you know what's good? A delicious Butterfinger. Just like a Kit Kat.
Oh my God.
So they found...
This is the episode where we try to get candy sponsors.
They found the transmitter there with Teresa, and A-Team suggests that she may have been bribed to send out data from the park, which he says has happened before, and fell while trying to do so. And then Ford says, it's a disappointing end to her story, isn't it? While trying to hold back a very sinister smile that for some reason he could not hold back.
His face is permanently sinister now, though. Like, once the reveal with Bernard came out, Ford is sinister for the remainder of the series.
He's like your friend who, like, you're about to get iced, but you don't know it. And you're like, why is my buddy, like...
Why are you looking at me that way?
Yeah. And he's like, no reason. And you're like, dude, is this guy just like... Did he just have sex in the bathroom or something? Like, what's going on with this guy? But he's about to ice you. That's Ford at all times now.
Okay.
And it's like, dude, Ford, you clearly don't care about being caught because it's not hard to hold back a smile for like a minute. And also, it's not hard to not smile at the fact that you just murdered a high-ranking person at your company. Like, if I murdered Ross, like, I'd be happy. But I wouldn't, like, smile about it in front of people, you know?
Yeah, you're just giving it away, you know?
No, I can't do that. That would, if people found out I did it, then it would just be kind of sad. Because I'd want to have that knowledge forever. And just so you know, when I think about this, Ross, you're wearing a horrible outfit when I killed
you. Oh, fuck.
You had a bad, you were not dressed to die that day.
That sucks.
But you got anyways. This whole Ford smile thing really creeps Charlotte out and causes her to accuse him of being involved with, out really saying she was accusing, like, it's very clear she's like, I think Ford's involved in this just from the way they show her face.
Yeah, she's like, this is all very convenient for you.
Yeah, but she can't really accuse him because maybe he'll kill her too.
Well, and what they were doing wasn't necessarily morally up, you know, it wasn't all in the up and up either. They were trying to get information. They were trying to steal information from their own property, but without his knowing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Ford turns this accusal into just Teresa bashing because he's like, well, I actually know what Teresa was doing. And he uses this, you know, he's like, I know Teresa, it was a hoax what you did. And I know this whole thing with Clementine was fake.
Right.
So I say that we need to give QA, which is quality assurance, that they need to have less say in the park's day-to-day operations, which is great for Ford's purposes of just destroying the park with his new narrative.
Yep.
But also he's like, well, that's going to make us shorthanded, so I'm going to bring Bernard back.
Yeah. No, this everything's going his way here.
He is just cutting, he's like tying off all the loose ends now, and he's just making this Teresa thing completely to his advantage. We cut to Maeve on a tablet, which again, how does that not tip off people walking by? I never will understand this.
Yeah, I mean, listen, let's bury it right here. But
that's not normal.
What is that? We need to
come back. Is it gone now?
I think so. There was a noise. We're just going to keep going.
Yeah.
There are a lot of instances where Maeve is doing things with the Two Stooges that would be very, very obvious. Like, at no point is there a reason why a host should be holding a pad. Ever.
How that just all that is saying this host can recognize something that can hurt it. I understand, yes, that Maeve now has gotten past these things, but the idea is not that Maeve shouldn't be able to do it. It's the idea that people seeing Maeve do it understand that she can't do it.
Listen, this is a very poorly run company from top to bottom. The fact that no one is really keeping an eye on anyone else successfully is really problematic.
Yeah, it's a clusterfuck over there in Delos. I don't know what they're doing.
Delos.
Sylvester comes in saying he's scared of getting investigated because there's some big investigation going on. Presumably it's Teresa's death investigation.
I would have to guess yes.
So he asks Maeve to go back to playing dumb and give him the tablet, which she does. You wouldn't normally expect her to do that, but the reason is because she already found out everything she needed to know, she says.
Right.
She goes on to talk about how she's looked into her makeup and discovered something that sounds like the bicameral mind. She says there's two minds arguing with each other in her head.
Which is, this whole thing was real confusing to me. I didn't really get it.
Well, she then says that she can tell in her brain that there are things that she was designed to do that are just out of her reach. And I think, to me, that's the maze.
Right.
She's saying that there's things that I can do, but I just can't quite get there yet. But
if you get to the center of the maze, then you can.
And then she says, who is Arnold?
Yeah.
So she's looked deep enough into her own brain to now know that Arnold's up in there.
It's interesting to me that this much information is in that tablet, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, what's also interesting is that Sylvester has no idea who Arnold is. Just further keeping this whole Arnold thing in bizarre circumstances. People who should know who Arnold is don't, and people who don't do.
Right.
So weird. Sylvester says that she can't get the changes she wants unless she blackmails Tex and Behavior. And Maeve's like, well, you should just take me to Behavior and do all the changes. And then I'll be someone else's problem.
Yeah.
She's very manipulative because she knows Sylvester just wants nothing more than be completely done with her. So she uses that to her advantage by saying, well, if you do this last thing for me,
then I'll be out.
It doesn't go well for Sylvester, though.
No. As most things are not going to.
Yeah, he's like, okay. He's like, we're gonna put her to sleep and then we're gonna brick her.
Yeah.
Just turn her into a brick.
I love that it's called bricking her, like, because that's a cell phone thing, you know, yeah. Like once when your cell phone dies or goes breaks, it's a brick.
So that's his plan, and it's clear that Felix isn't on board with it, but you know, we cut away before we see really how Felix reacts, but Maeve sees them arguing and in her 20 bulk
and
perception
brain.
And she can
hear everything they're saying because fucking Sylvester's an idiot.
And I'm sure Maeve has supersonic hearing at this point.
That's what I would assume too.
So we cut away from that. We cut to the Man in Black and Teddy riding horses in Wyatt territory. The Man in Black is back on his self-important bullshit, talking to hosts who can't comprehend what he's saying. He keeps doing it. Does it again. But this time, rather than simply annoying us, it looks like it might come back to bite him in the ass because while he's talking to Teddy, Teddy has a flashback to the Man in Black calling him a loser.
Yes. So this is finally the tables start to turn here a little bit between in this Teddy Man in Black situation. Thank God.
So they stumble across an ambush aftermath and come across an injured woman. This was what I mentioned earlier, the parody between the storylines.
The parallels.
Parody. P-A-R-I-T-Y, not P-A-R-O-D-Y.
Not P-A-R-O-D-Y.
No. So we have earlier William and Dolores stumbling across an ambush with one person who is
survived.
Now we have the same exact thing, both Man in Black and Teddy.
Yep. Very interesting.
There's a lot of that in this episode. I'm going to keep saying that just to really drive it home. The host that they see, who is still alive, is actually the same host who greeted William when he first arrived in Westworld. I don't remember what her name was. They call her Angela now.
So she was the hot one who set him up with all of his stuff.
Yep. The one who, like...
Your phone just rang?
It's my computer phone.
Wow, you take phone calls on your computer?
Well, I have the option. That's the technology that we have these days.
Yeah, you can turn that off, which I do. But so, yeah, she's the one that got him in the gear room and had him pick out his shit.
And I will also say, the actress who plays Angela, I believe her name is Tallulah Riley. That's Elon Musk's ex-wife.
No way.
Yep.
And Elon Musk went to the South by Southwest World deal.
Yep. He did.
That's crazy.
Also, her and Elon Musk were married twice and divorced twice.
You're kidding.
No.
Dude, so she's hot and crazy. Perfect.
So yeah, and Man in Black, he says, apparently he's seen her before too, from what he says, but he says he figured they would have retired her for some reason.
So right.
Maybe she's an old host that the Man in Black saw when he first started coming, which makes sense, because when Maeve has that one flashback to what looks like an early time in the park, we see her there too. So we can guess that she's a pretty old host.
Yeah, I mean, he could have seen her at any point during his 30-year stint as a repeat guest and then just never seen her again and assumed she must have got retired and the only reason he remembered her is because she was so hot or something. Who knows?
Yeah. Or maybe he's a big Elon Musk guy.
Or that.
So the woman says, Wyatt's men did this and killed everyone. And Teddy says, it's Wyatt's way.
What the hell?
Wyatt's way sounds like the slogan for a locally owned car dealership called Wyatt Motors. You'll love the way we do business. It's the Wyatt way.
Yeah, I just don't get why Teddy has to say cheese dick things all the time, but it is what it is.
Killing everyone.
It's part of his character.
killing everyone. It's Wyatt's way. The man in black hears some sounds while Teddy is cutting the woman free, and he goes to investigate. And then one of Wyatt's men attacks him, one of these crazy, freaking, like, insane ram human hybrid type dudes.
This isn't a man, is it?
I think it's a man.
It's not some kind of monster?
It's both.
It takes bullets without a care.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with these dudes.
I don't know what that is, but it's crazy.
Yeah, they don't seem to be able to be affected by weapons. So Teddy comes in to help while the woman kind of just sits there, like staring blankly, which makes sense later on when we find out she's part of Wyatt's crew.
Right.
But they overpower him, with Teddy and the Man in Black. But in the process, Teddy has remembered Man in Black from that night he dragged Dolores away.
Yeah, at one point, Man in Black gets a rope around this beast's neck, and he's dragging him away, and it causes this Teddy flashback where he was doing the exact same, similar situation to Dolores, yes.
So we've cut to Maeve. I forgot to mention.
He hits him with a revolver and knocks him out.
Revolver whips him.
Man in Black out cold. Teddy, for the first time ever that we have seen, is has acted violently towards the Man in Black, who, by the way, is a guest, and I thought hosts weren't supposed to be able to hurt guests.
We've seen multiple times. Remember with Logan, they say only the right amount.
Only the right amount. I gotta remember that, only the right amount.
We cut to Maeve directing Felix and Sylvester to the behavior room in which they can work on her. Before they put Maeve under, she says, good luck to Sylvester.
Yeah, this was weird. I mean, the obvious thought process here is like, okay, so it wasn't terribly surprising that Felix was helping Maeve here, that she pops up alive. But
when has he ever not helped out Maeve?
What I don't get is the good luck thing. Why fake it at all? Why be put down momentarily? It was all very strange to me.
They weren't.
For sure she knew everything that Sylvester and Felix said to each other in the hall.
Yes.
100% I exactly knew what was going to go on here. This was just weird.
Well, they had to shut her down as part of the rebuilding process.
Right.
They had to. So she was getting shut down regardless. She just knew that Felix, she's so smart, she knew Felix was going to side with her. She just knew.
So good luck was just her talking shit, basically. Yeah, and then I loved how she freezes up staring directly at him.
That's the creepiest
still.
Shit ever. Yeah. That reminds me of Rowan Atkinson's narcoleptic character in Rat Race, who would just fall asleep all the time.
Yeah, that guy cracks me up. That's a really highly underrated movie, by the way. That is a funny-ass movie.
I have that movie on VHS, and I used to watch it all the time growing up.
Also, props to the guy who plays Sylvester. Great actor. I thought he did such a good job.
Ptolemy Slocum.
Is that his name? Yeah. Why do you know everyone's name?
We talked about it last time.
It's a little
time.
Weird. Okay.
He was in Grand Theft Auto.
Oh, yeah. Fuck, dude. That's so bizarre.
We cut away here just before we see if Felix reformats Maeve, which we know she ends up not doing. Cut to my man's Lee Sizemore, working on a cannibal host. I love seeing how the sausage is made here. It's beautiful to see a master of his craft at work.
Yeah, it's
Lee.
So funny. It's like an acting coach.
Yeah. And then Charlotte walks in, and Lee's kind of like, oh, shit. He says, our first encounter was under such unfortunate circumstances. Which is a power move line. It's pretty much, I was drunk and my boss was chewing me out. And then
it's
Lee,
not a power move line, it's a bullshit line.
I love Lee. He offers up clearly fake condolences to Charlotte over what happened to Teresa, another power move.
Yeah, this is a little funny.
And then Lee says to Charlotte, he's like, well, I heard that Teresa wasn't so loyal. To which Charlotte responds that everything that Teresa did was at Delos' behest. Why is she saying this very damning sentence to Lee?
That is a good question. I'm not really sure.
Does she assume Ford already knows this? Because if not, Blabbermouth Lee, who is a known blabbermouth, last person I'd ever tell a secret to, he literally goes on.
Maybe it's a test. I don't know.
He goes on to divulge a secret like 5 seconds later.
Yeah. This was odd.
She keeps, because Charlotte keeps what Teresa died working on a secret, but then Lee's like, I have a secret too. Ford has me working on, like, dude, it's not a secret anymore. It's not at all.
He's kind of a bumbling idiot.
I love him.
I love him too. He's one of my favorite characters. I'm just saying he's kind of a moron.
Yeah, he is. So yeah, he tells Charlotte that Ford has him working on who he thinks is Wyatt. And Charlotte responds that in reality, Ford just gave him mindless busy work because that's not Wyatt he's working on. But she's like, I think you're ready for a real job.
Yeah, she's pulling Lee into the corporate fold here and going to have him doing, you know, her bidding.
Always want Lee on your side. Always. Cut back to Felix and Sylvester with offline Maeve, or so we think. Because, hey, it looks like Maeve wasn't reformatted, and also that she knew all along what Sylvester's plan was, and also that her core code was changed up, and also that she's now capable of slashing Sylvester's throat because she did it, and he was lying on the floor about to die before Sylvester came in with a magic skimp using wand and patched him up. And also that it's now time to recruit for Maeve's army. I wanted to say all that because I feel like Micah would have no idea. That sounds so confusing, all of that, you know?
Yes, it is. I'm confused, and I watched the show.
Like, a magic skin-fusing wand. That was my favorite part.
Okay, so my question with that thing was, it reminded me of the gun they take out to, like, dry your teeth quicker when you're getting your teeth whitened or something. But my question is, I get how a thing like that could seal cut flesh. I understand. Melting it back together or whatever, and then it would be very painful. But it wouldn't fix any severed veins or arteries underneath.
I had the exact same thought. What I imagined was all the blood that would be pouring out of the hole
is just now flushing down into your you know, lungs and shit.
Just painting your organs red.
Right. I don't really get it.
Well, maybe, yeah, that was confusing to me too. I guess it must burn the vein closed. So after they patch up Sylvester, who's, you know, you don't want to get your throat slashed. But another throat slashing we see was the man in black with Maeve. Another example of some parody in between the storylines.
Indeed.
We cut back to Maeve in the park. Maeve tells how Clem... She tells the new Clem that a safecracker is coming. Ooh, Hector.
Ooh.
She loves Hector. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
I originally thought she was doing this to recruit Hector for her army. And I was like all ready for her to...
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought too.
But she didn't. That was confusing to me. I thought that was like what was exactly going to happen. Why would she not recruit Hector? What a great guy to have on your team. He's awesome.
I don't know.
Maybe it's one of those things like, you know, don't dip the pen in the company ink. She doesn't want to have a work relationship.
I don't think that's it.
Would you like to have a work relationship, Ross?
Nope.
Okay.
Thank you.
The bartender tells Maeve that she's racked up a huge bar tab, but she uses her new privileges to get this host to not only forgive her tab, but also give her free alcohol. So he does this little, like, crazy glitch thing and then obliges. And this is when Maeve knows now that she has complete control in the bar.
Yeah, and then she goes a little crazy with it. She's just going around changing every, you know, telling people to do stuff. The rest of the episode.
She's acting like all of us would act our first time in Westworld.
Right.
And it's crazy because Maeve at this point is essentially a guest who's part of the storyline, but also a guest who can... She has more control over the hosts than guests do.
Yep.
This is like Ford. She's like Ford in the park.
She's pretty much godlike at this point.
It's
wild.
It's fun to see. I love. My favorite part is when she has the two marshals shoot each other. Practice the quick draws on each
hilarious.
Other. So just like with Teddy, we see that Maeve remembers the man in black as somebody who's hurt her. Now, is this Ford programming the hosts to turn on the man in black because of his quest to find the maze?
Very real possibility. That's certainly an option.
Because it's both happening now as the man in black is getting closer and closer. It seems pretty coincidental, if not, you know, real.
Yeah.
Maeve then sends away a lot of people in the Mariposa just before Hector rides in, presumably to make his heist easier.
And it's also just because she's testing out a lot of what she can do and can't do,
She gives a bunch of people free sex.
Yep.
It's like, hey, go have sex with those guys and they're not going to pay you. Like, that sucks.
Right.
That sucks for the prostitutes. They're working women. They're trying to make money. They make money on tips, literally.
And literally.
Literally on tips. It's a penis joke. So Hector rides into town, and we see the whole song and dance with, you know, the walk-in, and then the guy telling, you need to state your business, mayhem, yada, yada, yada. Except now there's some Maeve-tailored changes. When Hector is about to be confronted by the sheriff, Maeve makes the sheriff judge Hector and his group to be upstanding, God-fearing citizens. And the sheriff's like, well, nothing to see here.
He, like, tips his cap to the chick.
I love when he tips his cap to Armistice and then turns around and then she just shoots him.
Yeah, that was kind of a bitch move.
That was funny. I love that.
Yeah. I didn't like that she shot him. That pissed me off.
You thought he was just letting him be, you know? I don't know.
He was just going to walk off. What the fuck shoot him in the back for? Tipped his cap. Come on. Have some manners, lady. Damn. Snake face.
Maeve looks very satisfied with her work here. I think she was using the chaos of this narrative as a good time to practice her new skills.
Yeah, pretty much. She's just seeing what she could do, how to do it, that kind of thing.
So we cut to Ford and Bernard from this. Ford thanks Bernard for cleaning up the mess, and Bernard notices something's off with Ford because he's good at reading people. And Ford says what's going on with him is that he wonders how Bernard really feels because he's in a unique position. a programmer who knows intimately how the machines work, and a machine who knows its own true nature.
Yes.
Bernard says he doesn't understand the things he feels and asks if the things he's experienced that caused him to have these feelings were real. And Ford's like, well, the self is a kind of fiction for hosts and humans alike, saying it doesn't matter whether what you've experienced happened or didn't happen. It's just a matter of, it's a story, you know? Like, right now, I could falsely remember the past, and that would be a part of my story.
Yeah, this whole segment here, obviously, being high, it was all the more intense and confusing and crazy to think about, and all of the things that this show is beginning to address with consciousness and life and, you know, memory and reality and alternate reality. And the only other time when I've watched something that made me feel as like, oh shit, as this is like Inception or something. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's that kind of vibe of like, damn, this could legitimately happen. So.
Yeah, Ford is just pretty much saying to Bernard, the self, like who you are in the present, is just a sum of all the things in the past. So it doesn't matter if those things happened or not. If you think they happened, then they're a part of your identity.
Right.
Bernard asks why Ford says he's lifelike but not alive, because he says, you know, that makes him lifelike to have these experiences.
I mean, it even goes back to the question that the original host, William, meets in the gear, that takes him to the gear room, when she's like, he says, like, are you real? And she's like, if you can't tell, does it really matter?
Yeah. There's all these things. What is reality? I mean, we have Bernard asking Ford. He says, pain only exists in the mind. It's always imagined. So what's the difference between my pain and yours? That is fucking wild.
Yep.
The idea that is there something that is reality and you either adhere to it or you don't? Or if it's real to you, is it real?
Right.
I think
that's the crazy.
Was that Nietzsche?
Nietzsche.
Friedrich Nietzsche.
A very poignant philosopher from back in the day.
I believe he was from China.
No.
Bernard. So, yeah, what we learn is that this question that Bernard asks about pain only existing in the mind, what's the difference between my pain and yours? This is the question that Bernard says, or that Ford says, consumed Arnold, filled him with guilt, and drove him mad. And the answer to this question, according to Ford, is that consciousness doesn't exist.
I love this.
Give me your thoughts on consciousness doesn't exist.
I mean, the way he explains it here and the way he draws these parallels between the hosts, you know, between AI and real intelligence, if you will, was pretty mind-blowing. It's pretty wild to think about. And it's, I mean, a lot of this is stuff that modern day scientists are wrestling with in the creation of these different things that we're working towards technology wise. So, I mean, it was just the concept that Bernard isn't missing anything at all, that he has everything he needs to be just as human or real or live as Ford, is pretty mind bending.
Yeah, there's a Father John Misty quote from his song, I'm Writing a Novel. The people who live there said I had to get out because my reality is realer than yours or something. Just the idea that somebody...
Who the hell is Father John Misty?
You don't
Misty?
Know Father John Misty? He's the best... Dude, if you want to have some... If Westworld is a TV show that makes you think about reality and the way the world works, Father John Misty is the singing version of that. He says that, yeah, and told the people who live there they had to get out because my reality is really new. He's saying he went over to a people's house and was like, hey, this is my house now. My reality is more real than yours, and I think this is my house. The idea that, you know, we're all living in our own realities. Is a human's reality more real than a robot's reality? Just because they have more, I guess, access to creation? I don't know. I just really wanted to plug Father John Misty.
Mm-hmm.
I love the father. Mm-hmm. Bernard asks if Ford has made him hurt anyone like this before. And Ford says, of course not. But then Bernard remembers that he choked out Elsie.
Yeah, so this is him. Remember, that's what's happening, right?
Yes.
Because we don't... what happens on the screen, as you all watch the episode, are aware, is that suddenly we see Bernard choking Elsie from behind, or from the front, I'm not, whatever, choking Elsie, presumably killing her. And first of all, the note I made on Blazing Saddles was, Elsie, no! but then we see on Bernard's face, presently in the room with Ford, his face, it is the reaction of a man remembering that he choked Elsie.
Yeah, exactly.
But we're just assuming these two things go together, right? Like, we don't know.
We don't know, but that's exactly what it seems like, so I'm running with that.
Okay. Which, no, I'm with you. I did, too. I'm just saying this show being the way that it plays with us, and I'm saying that could have been them playing with us. I don't know.
What I don't know is if you got to imagine that Ford wiped out Bernard's memory of killing Elsie or, you know, doing
yeah,
this
so that's the other question is like, okay, so is Bernard now accessing memories that he's not supposed to be able to, much like other hosts have been, even though he was the one enabling those hosts to like the whole thing going, I'm just, my brain's exploding.
But yeah, this opens the door 100% to Bernard remembering after his memory is wiped that he killed Teresa.
Yep.
Because he's assumingly remembering this Elsie thing that he shouldn't be remembering. So what's to say he shouldn't?
Yeah, I don't know. That's what, so that's what made me question whether or not that was really him remembering, is that he shouldn't be able to theoretically, but we also know that just because someone shouldn't be able to do something doesn't mean they won't be able to do it.
In this show, that typically means they're going to do it at some point.
The fuck are you looking at behind me?
There's nobody there. I was just kind of staring off into the distance thinking about this show.
Thought somebody was like sneaking up on me to kill me or something. Ridiculous.
So Ford talks about not losing yourself in troubling memories like some other hosts, right as it cuts to Dolores and Williams. Dolores and William. And Dolores and William find Dolores' home that she's been looking for.
I'm home.
And Dolores is about to get lost in a troubling memory, like Ford said some hosts were doing, namely Dolores.
Oh my God.
So what Dolores finds looks a lot like the town that she keeps having flashbacks to.
Yes. This is all starting to tie together here.
It is. You know, we see the church steeple. We see the main street that, you know, we see. I haven't seen the wolf yet. That wolf that runs across when everybody's dying. I really want to see that wolf.
True. Haven't seen him yet.
Upon seeing the town, Dolores appears to go back and relive a memory of walking through there. She actually changes clothes this time to her normal clothes that she's always worn, the blue dress. We see the host who greeted William when he got to Westworld again, like I said, walking through this town. It looks like this is a town in which Westworld techs help teach hosts to act out their characters. And
right.
It seems like this is old because some of the hosts like are really shitty at dancing even. So to me, you know, dancing is something that I imagine these hosts would be like programmed to do.
This to me was the beginning days of the park.
That's what I thought too.
Yeah.
It's like this is, you know, these, there are the techs out there in the park working on, these techs aren't inside Westworld working with the hosts like they do nowadays. You know, they have them in the glass rooms and they help them do everything.
Mm-hmm.
This is what me and Ross think back in all the way in the beginning when they only had the park. There was no Mesa Hub. There was just, you're in the park and, you know, we're working on stuff right here. Kind of like practicing for like a play. You know, on the stage,
right,
in the set.
Right.
So Dolores, we see the church from all the flashbacks, as well as Lawrence's daughter, who talks to Dolores and asks if she has found what she's looking for, cryptically. Then see what appears to be Dolores massacring all the townspeople and then turning the gun on herself.
Yeah. Don't know what the hell this is all about,
no,
but it's intense.
I have no idea. We've seen this before, though. Like I said, the flashback to the town with the wolf, and there's just everybody dead everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But now we see that it was Dolores who did this in this memory, real, fake. I don't know.
Yeah, this is. There's no context to this yet. There's nothing we can do with this information at the time.
Not at all. William stops Dolores. He pulls the gun away from her head where she's put it while in this memory stupor. And then Dolores goes through that speech, the same speech Maeve did about losing herself in her flashbacks, not knowing what's real. She's like, William, are you even real? Dolores is completely lost in her memory at this point. We see, after she snaps out, that there was never any town at all. That Dolores was just walking towards what she thought was a town. William was probably standing back watching her going like, what the fuck are you talking about? You're going wild.
Right.
You're going buck wild. So most important thing, though, is we see that where they are is where the buried steeple is that Ford went to with Little Ford earlier.
Yeah, it's blackened and buried, maybe even burnt.
And we know that one of the episodes, I believe episode 2, ended with Ford saying that this was going to be the new narrative. Was the new narrative revolved around this area with this church steeple?
Yes.
So now we know where the new narrative is going to be, what's based on. And maybe it's going to be based on Dolores' massacre. You know? That would be crazy. That's something I really want to see. If that is the case, Ford, finish up the fucking narrative so I can see Dolores just massacre people. Please.
He's working on it, Jared.
Barely. He's killing people. And covering up murder.
He's got other stuff to do.
Yeah, okay. Dolores tells William the same thing, like I said, furthering the parody between all the storylines in this episode. I'm trying to say it as many times as possible to just burn it into people's brains.
No, we get it.
William tries to tell Dolores that this place is bad for her, but on the contrary, Dolores goes, wait, I think these memories are what Arnold wants me to have. But William's like, no, we're getting out of here. You're going wild.
Yeah.
Just completely dismissing her. For as much as he's blindly followed her, it's kind of weird that he's like, but I think Arnold wants me to have these thoughts. And he's like, Arnold's not here. I'm here. Let's go.
Yeah, I think he's just kind of freaked out.
He must be, because then he's like, let's go back to Sweetwater. He pretty much says to her, let's go back to Sweetwater. You go crazy when we get out
he
this
far. He
says
the farther away we get from Sweetwater, the more you're kind of losing it, yeah.
Well, that's not very nice. What if you said that to your wife?
I don't think nice has anything to do with it.
Taylor, the further we get away from the house, you just go crazy. You're going insane.
Slightly different scenario. Not sure they're comparable.
I don't think she would like it, though.
Probably wouldn't, no.
So they hear hoofbeats as they're walking on this path at night. And who is it?
It's Logan.
Oh, it's Logan. He's pissed.
Yeah, he's part of this
posse.
The Confederados now. For some reason, Dolores thought these were Union soldiers when they're coming up. Are they wearing Union uniforms?
No, she just was hoping. Because I guess she thought maybe all the Confederados were dead or something.
Well, they're Confederados, and Logan's one of them now, and they're all in deep shit.
Logan is wearing a dope pin. Did you notice that it looks exactly like the Hand of the King pin from Game of Thrones?
I did not.
I actually looked it up, and that is an homage to Game of Thrones that they threw in here.
Interesting homage.
Yeah.
Randomly timed.
I know.
But yeah. Logan says, well, well, well. Billy, I've been looking for you for days. Man, you two are fucked.
Yeah, I don't want to know what Logan does to them, but I also really want to know.
Yeah.
We cut to Lee and Charlotte in cold storage. This is where Charlotte lays out her plan for Lee to turn a host. It ends up being Peter Abernathy, number one of all people. Seems like a bad guy to pick, but whatever.
Very strange.
Like, literally, everybody but him and Walter are normal hosts who were not fucked up ever, who were retired for different reasons. You picked the worst.
There has to be some meaning behind all this, yeah. The picking of Abernathy as the host with which to upload everything on the hard drive is crazy.
Horrible choice, Charlotte. But maybe Charlotte is a host and Ford picked her to pick him for a reason.
Maybe Charlotte built Ford.
Maybe Dustin fucked Peter Abernathy when he was a host.
Maybe there's a ham sandwich programming all of the hosts, including Sylvester, who is actually a host, to want to have sex with ham sandwiches to further the sexuality of ham sandwiches.
That's I'm gonna go on the Reddit Westworld tonight, the r/Westworld,
type that in there
and put that in and see if people are actually on board with this, because
okay.
I like it.
Okay.
So yeah, Charlotte wants Lee to give Peter Abernathy a personality so we can pass as a human, and then he's just going to leave the park on a train to smuggle the data out.
Pretty smart.
That's
unless
pretty
he
smart.
Has some explosive on his C6 vertebrae, in which case this is a terrible plan.
I hope he doesn't. But I also really hope he does. I totally hope he does. I would love to see Peter Abernathy just explode.
Mm.
Cut to the Mesa Hub, where we have a very interesting scene between the A-team Ashley Stubbs and Bernard. Ashley says three things to Bernard, and the last two get really weird responses from him. First off, he's like, Bernard, I'm happy to have you back. You know, I know we don't always agree, but it's good to see you. But then he says, I'm sorry to hear about Teresa. I know how close you guys were. And Bernard's like, what? And he's like, come on, it's my job to know these things.
Yeah, he's telling Bernard that he knew about Teresa and his love affair, And Bernard is like, what the fuck are you talking about? You have the wrong idea.
I barely knew her.
I respected her, but I barely knew her.
And then A-Team's like, what? But then he's like, okay, well, do you know where Elsie is?
Right.
And Bernard's just like, I bet she's enjoying her vacation.
Elsie, no.
No. And it seems to me, I would think that maybe that would have triggered a flashback for Bernard, you know? So maybe when Ford wiped his memory, that like makes it harder to access the old memories.
I don't know.
Something to think about.
I don't know.
Cut back to the man in black as Teddy's prisoner. Teddy is weirded out by the man in black since he doesn't have any idea who he really is. So he's just like, oh, I'm just going to beat you up and get the information out of you, you little bitch. He revolver whips him, I think, or maybe just punches him in the face.
Punches him in the face.
The man in black says that he is a god, a titan of industry, a philanthropist, a family man, married to a beautiful woman, father to a beautiful daughter. I'm the good guy, Teddy. Then last year, my wife took the wrong pills, fell asleep in the bath. Tragic accident. 30 years of marriage vanished. Damn, that's pretty tragic.
Getting all this information from the man in black at the end of this episode about his life outside of Westworld, his real life, if you will, is incredible and very interesting, goes without saying. But it gives us some backstory to explain his behavior, the way he is, why he's decided the maze is the only thing that matters, et cetera, et cetera. I don't put any questioning into whether or not his wife really did commit suicide. I think she committed suicide 100%. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing, it's too good of an explanation. It makes too much sense with his character for there to be some like underlying bullshit into it. You know
I think he's shooting straight with us. It's pretty crazy that we were able to get through 8 pretty much full episodes with where this man is a main character and we knew not a single thing about him or why he was there or what he was doing. The only clue we got was that he was a philanthropist, which we knew from that guy who came out to him and said his foundation saved his sister's life.
Yeah, him peeling back the curtain here, if you will, and giving us a little bit of reality or a lot of reality, it makes me hopeful that we will no longer have to hear him or watch him bullshit with the hosts with this meaningless, ridiculous, basically him jerking himself off via conversation.
Yeah, I'm done with that. So that's pretty sad, all the stuff he said. But what's even sadder is that his daughter hates him because he thinks that his wife killed herself to get away from him because he was every minute she was with him, she was terrified because she thought he was a monster.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if maybe, you know, him starting to go to Westworld 30 years ago and him starting to act on some of his baser instincts and behave in a way, you know, as people do when they go to Westworld, doing things without limits, living without limits, maybe that did have an effect on his real life and his real persona and did seep through enough for someone who knew him probably, presumably more than anyone in the world, knew him better than anyone in the world, his wife, and it like broke her, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
What the most interesting thing that I just realized right now while reading through the notes that I wrote, so he says last year his wife died. And he goes on to say that because of what his daughter said, so he's like, I don't think I am who my daughter thinks I am. So as a test, he came to Westworld, found a homesteader and her daughter, which is Maeve and her daughter,
yep,
and killed them to see what he felt.
Yeah, and he felt nothing.
And all this happened not that long ago.
Right. So Maeve was in her other storyline not that long ago.
And what I find craziest here is that this means for like at least like 28 years. Because he says last year, but I could have sworn that the guy said Maeve wasn't like, I think he said like 3 years ago when she was in her. Or maybe it was months. Either way, the man in black came for like 28, 29 years to this park without caring about the maze, without even knowing about the maze. Because he didn't find out about it until he killed Maeve.
Yep.
So what the hell was he doing? He was just going through every storyline. Like, dude, that had to get old. 28 years without even having the maze to find? Did you imagine that?
No, but they've been putting out new storylines constantly, upgrading the park, changing the hosts. It's like people who go to Vegas, you know, once a year for their whole lives or more. Some people go 4 times a year for their whole lives. The experience is still there. Yeah. It changes over time.
It just seems like I would need something huge to keep me bringing back like the maze for all those years. But yeah, so going back to this Maeve getting killed by the Man in Black deal, the whole time Man in Black is telling the story, Maeve is reliving it, you know, in the park in her head.
So what this explains finally for us is why the Man in Black was behaving the way he was in these flashbacks we've seen from Maeve, where he's murdering her and her daughter or mm-hmm. whatever, and why maybe some of the explanation for the other scenes we've seen from other hosts like Dolores or whatever, it was him seeing if he could do certain things or what he could do without feeling or anything yeah. like that, kind of rediscovering himself late in his life. And it really gives context to so much of what we've seen that didn't have any explanation before. Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, while Man in Black is saying all this, Maeve is reliving it in the park. She's like having these memories of the exact same thing going on, which results in her slashing New Clementine's throat while I'm picturing that she's slashing the Man in Black's throat.
Standing in the street, yeah, in front of everybody.
So three throat slashings this episode.
Big episode for throat slashing.
That's wild. Actually, four, because Maeve at the end that we're about to see.
Oh, yeah.
She cuts her own throat. Jesus. Man. It's like a... That's how Lawrence died, too. Shouts to Lawrence. So... The Man in Black, who did all this as a test to see if he'd feel something, he did not. He felt no remorse, but he felt something watching Maeve be truly alive, if only for a moment.
Yeah, so in her pain and suffering, he saw the purest version, the closest thing to real life through a host that he had seen to that point, and that's what hooked him.
And that was when the Maeve revealed herself to him.
Because she's laying in it.
Yeah, that was weird. Why...
I'm not sure how he'd be able to see that without the vantage point, but whatever.
Dude, that's like me walking up to the Nazca lines and being like, I know exactly what this is.
To the what?
The Nazca lines.
Oh, the fuck that is.
Come on, dude. Hey, all my geography fools out there, somebody call into the hotline, 888-6-FREEZE, and explain the Nazca lines to Ross. Thank you. Yeah, Man in Black. Seems like he's filling a big void in his life with the maze, you know? Because now he's like, well, I'm exactly who my daughter thinks I am, so I have no real meaning, but this is now the meaning of my life. And this is probably why, like Ross said, he loves seeing hosts experiencing pain, because that's what hooked him. Seeing Maeve in pain is what made him realize that he can get this excitement out of seeing how real the hosts are. So Maeve's now in trouble with the law, because she just slashed the fuck out of New Clementine's throat. So she gets a host to cause a shootout and runs away before these police officers can catch up to her. And finally, we see the Mesa Hub notice Maeve freaking out and Maeve doing something crazy.
This whole episode is like one of those ones where you're just like, okay, is anybody going to notice this? Finally.
So they send in a tag team to retrieve her. And we see a flashback to Maeve freaking out in the Mesa Hub after what the Man in Black did to her. She's still freaking out over her daughter and in complete shock.
Yeah.
Even though she's supposed to be able to be frozen, they can't freeze her motor functions. They say that her excitement and everything is overriding the ability of them to stop her. Nothing will get her to calm down except when Ford plays the song Reverie by Debussy, which he says is an old trick he learned from an old friend. Obviously, yeah,
Debussy
Arnold,
is the cousin of Lil Boosie, who some of you may know from the hit song I-N-D-E-P-E-N-D-E-N-T. You know what that means.
Dude, I'm pretty sure that's Webby.
Damn it. Whatever.
But I appreciate the joke, if not the result.
Okay.
Yeah, so apparently
Boosie.
That
that's
song...
That's Lil Boosie, just to be clear. Independent is Lil Boosie. Fuck you, Jerry.
Is it? I thought it was...
Nope, it's Webby. Boosie's featured on it. I am safe. It's okay. I'm good.
Well, I'm just happy. Somehow you, who claims to love rap, and me, who knows like five rap songs, got that right.
Jared, that is not a respectable rap song nor artist.
It's my favorite rap song. That's the only reason I knew. Mm. I assume this is where the Reveries update name came from, was the song Reveries by Debussy.
Yes.
Maeve here says, don't take away the pain. This pain, it's all I have left of her. Which Bernard says about his son later on. It's possible that he adapted this line from Maeve and added it into his arsenal as a host. It's part of his improv. That's what I took from this. Ford tries to wipe Maeve's memory and assign a new role to her. But before he can do that, Maeve takes a scalpel and just stabs herself right in the throat. If anybody here watches, I'm not going to spoil that for people. Never mind.
I don't know where you're going with that, and I don't really care. Yeah, so this is crazy. What's the deal here? Why'd she do that?
I I think she knew that somehow that he was about, because he said to her he was going to make her forget, and she didn't want to forget.
But that was a flashback, right?
Like she stabbed herself in the flashback.
Yeah. So how long, in the flashback, did she already have it? Whatever.
In the flashback, Ford is trying to wipe her, and she's like, fuck this. I don't want you to wipe my memory. I'm just going to kill myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because she wanted to be able to, I guess, die with those memories of her daughter rather than live without the memories.
But why would she be capable of killing herself like that?
Great question. Great, great question.
I guess we don't know when that was in the grand scheme of the timeline, no. But it just...
We know it was, yeah, around a year, two, 3 years ago. Okay. It was pretty recently. But yeah, crazy, crazy shit. We don't know. She shouldn't be able to do that. So there's clearly a big thing fucked up with Maeve, and the fact that they let her go back into the park after doing this is insane.
Right.
Like, she just showed that she could kill herself, which is definitely something against her programming.
It should be anyway. Yeah.
And then they just put her in there. That was wild to me. The Man in Black says he has a ton of conviction after explaining all this, and that conviction is that he'll stop at nothing to find the center of the maze. So he and the hosts, he says, both derive meaning from the maze.
Right.
You know, he's saying we both want to find out what's at the center. It benefits both of us. The woman host tries to get Teddy to kill the Man in Black, but he can't. So she, secretly being a member of Wyatt's gang, stabs him and says, "You've been gone a long while, Theodore. It's time you came back to the fold. Wyatt will need you soon."
Oh, snap.
And then Wyatt's men close in, and it's scary as shit because
there's like a bull guy again, and there's regular guys, and they're all wearing crazy costumes and masks, and it's terrifying.
Is that your Blazing Saddles?
No, that's just me, normal.
It was scary. And then they close in on them, and that's it. Credits roll. And now I'm going to go through each name on the credits. Number one, Noreen O'Toole.
You're a funny motherfucker.
That's all I remembered.
Great episode. The momentum the show has built the last two episodes alone is crazy.
Yeah. There's been no answers yet so far. And there are two episodes left.
Some answers. We're getting some reasoning behind some things, and we're getting there. I'm liking it. The momentum is there. I have faith. I'm psyched.
If you like the show, or if you just have questions, tweet at us, DM us, leave comments, rate and review Grand X Labs. If you hit us up, we will respond to you in some way. I am at Jared Borislow, JaredBorislow, on everything. Ross is at WR Bolin.
That is correct, sir.
On everything. At Freeze on Motor on Twitter is where you can see us interacting with Elsie, Shannon Woodward, and Jeffrey Wright.
It's lit.
Go check out our Twitter page right now if you don't believe me.
Freeze All Motor.
And follow it, too. And at Freeze All Motor Functions on Instagram. Our dope-ass intern, Tarina, who's the reason why these Westworld folks are noticing us every single week, is giving us multiple hilarious Photoshops.
For real. Shout out to Serena. She's killing it.
Crushing the game. And I think you'll like them. Follow us on social. Call into the cold line, 888-6-FREEZE.
It's time to freeze. What is wrong with you? I'm putting the microphone down. Close us out NPR style.
Okay. Tell a friend about the show. NPR style sign off. Freeze on Motor Functions is brought to you by Grand X Media and hosted by me, Jared Borislow, along with Ross Bolin. Michael Wiener produces the show. Follow him on Twitter at Michael Wiener. It's verified. Special thanks to intern Garrett, who helped us format and prepare the show, and intern Serena, who does insanely awesome Westworld themed Photoshop work for us that you can check out on our Twitter at Freeze on Motor and Instagram at Freeze on Motor Functions. Dedication. This is the last time I'm going to say it before I just take matters into my own hands. I'm calling out for you, the listeners. We want intro music. If you have audio experience, can get us a high-quality intro music, only like 20 seconds long, email me, jared@grandx.co. Let's get this money, kings. Goodbye.